Hi there, this is the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Oost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour. It's from True Love Magazine called When a Secret Admirer Goes Too Far. Here's the story. Hi, I'm Cassidy Roberts. I'd like to apply for a job, I said, glancing around the busy ranching supply store. It was the only place I hadn't already tried in Serendipity, and I needed the work. I don't know, Mr. Guthrie stood behind the counter, squinting his eyes off me, starting from the lips of my faded sneakers. His gaze traveled upward to the top of my sandy hair. You don't look like much, and this can be some pretty hefty work. Look, I've spent the last 2 years of my life at a truck stop, cooking, cleaning, and scrubbing for hundreds of people every day. I'm not afraid of hard work, and I have a strong back. Still, I really need a man for the job. Tell you what, give me a week, and if I can't pull my weight, you let me know, and I'll leave. No argument. Well, I held my breath as he drew the word out for several seconds. I guess I can give you a try. Here's a broom. Sweep up the hay and feed in the stock room. If a customer shows up, help him load the feed into his truck. Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. You won't be sorry, Mr. Guthrie. I grabbed the broom and practically ran in the direction of the stockroom, anxious to get out of sight before the man changed his mind. Almost jumping for joy, I had the large stockroom clean and neat in practically no time at all, thanks to a lull in customer activity. Hopefully it would make a good impression on the owner, because I really needed the job. I was new to town, and the quaint charm of Serendipity gave me hope that this could become a home to me. My departure from the last town I'd lived in had been by necessity. I'd left practically in the middle of the night, leaving no forwarding address. The new friends I'd made wouldn't miss me for long, with their busy lives and families to concentrate on. Not me. I was single, and the way things were looking, I figured I might as well plan on staying that way forever. I only hoped I'd left the object of my hasty departure behind at the truck stop where I'd worked. For the past 2 months, I'd received letters accompanied by a single red rose left in different places where I was certain to find them. I'd found the first one on top of my purse under the counter behind the cash register. Nearly handwritten, the note had read, "Dear Miss Cassidy, I dream of the day when we'll be together forever. Love, E.K." I'd received one on Wednesday and Saturday of the first week, and again on Wednesday and Saturday of the second week. At first, I thought it was cute and kind of romantic, but then the notes had started getting more personal and ugly. "Dear Miss Cassidy, you really shouldn't wear your skirt so short. It gives men the wrong idea about you. Love, E.K." I remember looking around the restaurant that day for the author, tugging at the hem of my skirt and feeling very self-conscious. The next letter was more of a threatening nature. "Dear Miss Cassidy, the men you smile at would never treat you as nicely as I will. Don't smile at them if you know what's good for you. Love, E.K." About that time, I started getting nervous. I brought one of the notes to a local police officer who frequented the truck stop and asked him if there was anything he could do to stop the man from writing the letters. He told me that until there was a serious threat, there was nothing he could do. Well, needless to say, that didn't make me feel any better, and the letters continued. I started receiving them at my house and even in my locked car. It was really getting to me, and I finally decided that since the police weren't doing anything, I would have to. And so I packed all my worldly goods into a rented truck and drove until I found a town that looked small and friendly, where everyone knew everyone else, and I would be the only stranger. That's how I came to Serendipity, looking for peace and a place I could call home. I used some of my meager savings to put a deposit on an old farmhouse about a mile outside of town. It was a fixer-upper, but the owner was going to let me rent to own. I didn't want to commit until I was sure I had a job, but I figured that if all went well, I'd be set with a new job, a new life, and no psychos around making me look over my shoulder every 5 seconds. In Serendipity, I felt like I could breathe for the first time in 2 months. "Excuse me, could you help me find the sweet feed for horses?" "Yes, sir," I said, setting the broom against the wall and without turning to look at who I'd spoken to, hurrying down the aisle to the spot I'd committed to memory for sweet feed. Scooting a hand truck over next to the stack, I shoved one of the feed bags off the pile and onto the dolly. "How many did you need?" I asked. "2, but I can get that," he said, reaching down to heft one of the 50-pound bags of feed onto his shoulder as easily as if it were a sack of feathers. "Sir, let me do that for you." As I said the words, my gaze traveled up the sexiest pair of jeans across a broad, masculine, chambray-covered chest and into the most gorgeous pair of ice blue eyes I'd ever seen. His hair was a dark brown, almost black, and his skin was tanned from many hours spent working under the sun. Confronted by the most beautiful specimen of male flesh I'd seen in a long, long time, all I could do was stand there with my mouth open and my heart refusing to beat. "I'll just carry this out to my truck and come back for the other one." His words jerked me out of my stupor, and I looked in horror at him walking away with the bag of feed. "Sir, let me carry that for you. I wouldn't think of letting a pretty little thing like you heft a sack of feed for me." "But, sir, that's my job," I said, looking around worriedly for Mr. Guthrie, hoping he wouldn't see me standing there arguing with the customer. "This could severely damage my chances of keeping this position, sir." "And letting you carry a big old bag of feed for me would seriously damage my pride," he retorted. Refusing to give up the bag, he was halfway across the feed room floor before I caught up to him. "Please," preparing to plead with the man, I caught a glimpse of Mr. Guthrie at the front of the store, turning in our direction. Before I could stop to think, I jerked the end of the bag off the man's shoulders. Gravity and 50 pounds of momentum worked against me, though, and I staggered backward under the weight of the heavy sack. The edge of another stack of similar bags of feed caught me behind my knees, and I knew then that I was doomed. Landing on my backside on the hard concrete floor, I had the wind thoroughly knocked out of me, and the weight of the feed crushed my chest and stomach. I couldn't move, nor could I breathe. Peering around the tall, dark, and handsome stranger standing over me, I could see Mr. Guthrie rushing over, a frown marring his countenance. "Help me, please," I gasped as soon as I could get sufficient wind in my lungs. Struggling to sit up, I waved my arms and legs futilely in the air like an inverted turtle, helpless and pathetically hopeless. Rolling his eyes but seeing my obvious distress, the hunky cowboy lifted the bag off my chest with one hand, extending his other hand to pull me to my feet. "What's going on here?" Mr. Guthrie demanded, sweat popping out on his forehead, which he promptly mopped with a faded red bandana. "You need some help carrying the feed out, Cole?" "No, I've got all the help I need right here," he said, smiling at me as I brushed the dust off my backside. Holding my breath, I waited for him to tell Mr. Guthrie of my disastrous attempt to divest him of his burden, but instead of the expected criticism, I was shocked by his next words. "Where'd you find such a nice addition to your staff, Rufus?" The frown cleared from the old man's face and he smiled. "Hired her today," he said, rocking back on his heels and taking all the credit for having the good sense to give me the chance I'd had to beg him for. "Sure brightens up the place, if you ask me," Cole said, taking the last few steps to his pickup truck and tossing the bag in. Suddenly, remembering the other bag on the hand truck, I turned to wheel it out to Cole's truck. Hefting it up to my waist, I could just get it halfway over the edge of the covered tailgate. With a little more effort, I pushed and shoved until the bag was in the back of the truck, right next to the other one. Stepping back, I admired my accomplishment and slapped my hands together. I could do this job, despite Mr. Cole, whatever his name was. Feeling empowered, I walked away from the two men talking contentedly about the weather, cattle prices, and football. Things were definitely looking up for me. Later that evening, though, I wasn't so sure. My back ached, my feet were sore, and my car wouldn't start. Fortunately, it had gotten me all the way out to my cars. All the way out to my house before it decided to conk out. I just needed to figure out what to do with it before the next day, or I'd have to leave awfully early to walk all the way to work on time. Still, my phone wasn't hooked up yet, so all I could do was go to my nearest neighbor's house and ask to use their phone or jumper cables. At least that was the theory, only it was a good half of a mile to the next house. Knowing I might not find any help in the morning at the red-eyed hour of 5:30, I bolstered my flagging spirits and set off at a brisk pace. The December weather was much cooler than I'd expected for South Texas, and I was exhausted by the time I reached my destination. Standing on the porch of my new neighbor's house, I hesitated to knock. It was almost dark outside, and I hated making my first impression in my dirty, sweaty, forlorn state. But it could not be helped. I had to have assistance, or I'd be faced with a long, exhausting walk to work the next day. And judging by the way my feet felt right then, well, suffice it to say, I wanted to leave that as my last option. So, raising my hand resolutely, I knocked lightly. When there was no answer, I raised my hand again to knock louder, but before my knuckles met the door, it opened. My immediate reaction of relief sent a smile to my lips. until I looked into those ice blue eyes and realized that the man standing in front of me was Mr. Cole, whatever his name was, from the fiasco at the feed store, the one I'd made a complete fool out of myself in front of earlier. "Well, well, well," he said with a slow, sexy smile, "if it isn't the feed store lady, what brings you to my neck of the woods?" Great, just great. New to town and hoping to make this my new home, I'd made my first impression with the county's best-looking man, less than stellar, and now I was about to prove my stupidity to him by asking for help with a cranky car. So much for being independent and standing on my own 2 feet. "Actually, I'm your neighbor. Do you mind if I use your phone?" I asked. "Don't mind at all," he replied, stepping back to allow me to enter the old frame house. Curious, but not wanting to sound too curious, I asked, "Are you sure I won't be disturbing you or your family?" I thought that was a clever way of asking, "Are you married?" without sounding too obvious. He smiled, his slow, sexy smile again, and my knees went weak. "No, ma'am, I'm not married yet," he said, looking me over as if he were considering me as an offering. Well, I certainly wasn't looking for a husband, even if he was the best thing I'd seen since sliced bread. Damn, he was cute. Turning away from him, I looked around the interior of his home. It was a large old farmhouse with high ceilings and big picture windows. The rooms were open and airy, sparsely but tastefully furnished. There was little in the way of decorative touches, but it was inviting and livable just the same, like a home should be. "The phone is in the living room on the end table by the couch," he said from behind me. I moved in the direction he indicated, his presence permeating the room, making it hard for me to concentrate on the purpose of my visit. "I also need a phone book if you have one," I said, turning to look back at him. He was standing so close. I took an involuntary step backward and almost fell over the arm of the couch. His hand shot out immediately to grab my arm, pulling me up quick against his chest to steady me. Pressed against him like that, I found it difficult to breathe and my head felt light. I put it down to hard physical labor and lack of food. Granted, it was something more, but I refused to let my thoughts go there. Taking a deep breath, I inhaled the scent of him, all masculine and soapy clean. My hands rested against the hard, muscled wall of his chest, and I stared at his neck through the opening in his shirt. My gaze traveled upward. I realized that his lips were only inches away, and they looked so kissable. About that time, the corners of his mouth turned up and I shot a glance to his eyes, where I saw a sparkle of humor. He was laughing at me. Pushing hard against his chest, I sidestepped away from him, looking around with lifted brows. "Do you have a phone book?" I asked. "Yes, ma'am, I certainly do." Rifling through the drawers of a nearby desk, he pulled out a thin phone book and handed it to me. "What in particular are you trying to find? Do you know of a good auto mechanic around here?" I asked, flipping to the back of the book in the yellow pages. "As a matter of fact, I know a very good auto mechanic." "Why?" I hated admitting to him that I needed help. He probably already thought that I was a disaster looking for a place to happen, based on our earlier experience at the feed store. I shrugged. "My car won't start," I said with a sheepish grin. "Why don't you let me have a look at it? Maybe it's something simple that can be fixed without having to take it into the shop." "Oh, I couldn't impose on you. I've already interfered enough for one day. Hey, we're neighbors now. And what are neighbors for but to help each other when they're in need? Besides, I'm pretty good with my hands. I looked at his big, calloused hands and thought about things other than cars with those hands would be good with. Shaking out of my errant thoughts, I smiled. Okay, I'll take you up on that. Good, he said. Good, I repeated. He stood a second longer as if I'd argue some more. Then he smiled and turned toward the door. Following him out, I got a good eyeful of a great tush and a sexy pair of jeans. Not a bad view. So what if I'd been driven from home by a scary secret admirer, landed on my can in front of my new boss and the most gorgeous hunk of male in the country, not to mention having my only means of transportation crap out on me. The day was not a total loss if I was going to get to watch as Cole, or whatever his name was, leaned over the hood of my car. Life had its moments, and I was not immune to them. You know, it occurs to me that we haven't been properly introduced. My name is Cassidy Roberts, I said, waiting for him to open the door to his pickup truck. I'm Cole Kittrick. It's mighty nice to meet you, neighbor. Standing to the side, he held the door open while I climbed up into the truck. Settling into the seat, I thought about how nice it would be not to have to walk all the way back to my house. So what brings you to our little town of Serendipity? He asked, sliding in behind the wheel of the truck. I needed to get away, I replied without thinking. He glanced sharply at me. From the law? I chuckled. No, not the law, from a man. Not from your husband, I hope. No, I'm not married, I said, showing him the lack of a ring on my finger. I had a secret admirer who left me creepy notes. He frowned. Must have been bad to cause you to leave. Why didn't you take it to the police? I talked to an officer and he seemed to think that as long as I wasn't being threatened physically, there was nothing they could do. So you just up and moved? His brow furrowed. That's drastic. I didn't have any ties to the place, and I figured it wouldn't hurt to make a fresh start. So here I am in Serendipity, hoping I can make a home for myself. Well, I, for one, am glad you're here. Like I told Mr. Guthrie, you brighten up the place. Thank you, I said, suddenly feeling a little shy from the unexpected compliment given in such close proximity. And what about you? What do you mean? Have you ever lived anywhere else but here? Nope, this is my home. I was born and raised here. He spread his arms wide and shrugged as he drove. This place is a part of me, always will be. What about family? I have two brothers, a little sister, and both parents are alive and well. Never been married, although I came close once. What happened? She decided the town was too small and she hightailed it out of here to the big city the night before our wedding. He shrugged and gave me a half of a grin. I'm sorry, I said softly, although guilty was the real emotion. I was feeling guilty because I was glad she ditched him. It meant he was available, and for this I had another emotion emerging, anticipation. Don't be. It was a lucky escape, if you ask me. How do you know it was living in the country that made her run? We were at the wedding rehearsal when I told her that I never wanted to live in the city. She asked me if I wouldn't at least consider it someday, And when I said, absolutely not, she turned a sickly shade of green. And that was the night she left, I finished. He nodded. And what about you? You don't look like a girl from a small town. I've never lived in a town as small as Serendipity. I've lived most of my life in the big city, but even though your neighbors are physically closer, you never really seem to get to know them. You're too busy beating the rush hour traffic to and from work, and the stress involved leaves you totally exhausted. I like a place where everyone knows everyone else. It's like one big extended family. Cole turned toward me and smiled, his eyes twinkling. That's serendipity. Everybody knows everybody else's business. You can't keep a secret around here to save your life. Still, I couldn't agree with you more about family. It's so obvious to me that when all else is lost, you still have family, be it immediate or extended. But I think it was more than living in the country that bothered Faith. It was obvious that she didn't really love me. My heart turned flips in my chest, then lodged in my throat. This guy couldn't be real. He was everything a woman should want. Stealing a glance from behind, beneath my lashes, I looked at him from the lips or the tips of his boots to the cowboy hat perched on his head. He was 100% pure, strutting, glorious male. What's not to love? I wondered. The woman must have been blind, deaf, and an absolute idiot. Cole chuckled and cast a rueful glance in my direction. I struggled not to drool and be too obvious in my attraction to him. After all, we'd only met that day, and he hadn't made anything even remotely near to a pass at me yet. How could I possibly tell if he even found me desirable? So, having been burned once, are you totally against all women now? Too late, I'd opened my mouth and asked exactly what I'd been wondering. Immediately, I cringed in the seat next to him, wishing I could take back what I'd said, strike it from the records and eat the words if I could. I knew it was as bad as just outright asking if I could consider him as being on the market, the marriage market or not. Pulling into the yard of my house, he shifted the car into park and leaned toward me, his face only inches from mine. No, I am not against all women, he said, staring down at my mouth. I licked my suddenly dry lips. A beautiful woman will always appeal, he said, lowering his mouth to mine, teasing me with a feather-light brush of his lips when I wanted so much more, so much that I wrapped my arms around his neck and pulled him closer, deepening the kiss. One of Cole's hands rested on the small of my back, while the other slipped under the hem of my shirt, smoothing a path up my side to the elastic band of my bra. I was a goner. His sensual onslaught made me want to jump right out of my skin, much less my clothes. It was warm in that truck. No, warm wasn't the word for it. Raging inferno came closer to describing the spontaneous combustion triggered by that kiss. But when his fingers found and released the hooks on the back of my bra, a cool, wet waft of air touched the healed skin of my back, having the effect of a bucket of cool water being poured over me. Jerking away from him, I fumbled for the catch to my undergarment and hooked it back into place without looking at him. Straightening my blouse, I breathed deeply before turning to face him. My gaze dropped before his, which left me staring at the evidence of his arousal. I had done that. I was appalled from having teased him, but at the same time, I was feeling a strange sense of power. Wow, I had done that? Realizing I was staring at an intimate part of his anatomy, my face burned. Cassidy, I'm sorry. I had no right to come on to you like that. Raking a hand through his hair, he looked out the front windshield. I don't know what came over me. Then, tipping his head to my direction, he slanted a crooked grin at me. No, I take that back. I've wanted to do that ever since I first saw you at the feed store. I couldn't help myself. His confession left me feeling lighthearted and as giddy as a school girl. Perhaps we should see to my car, unless you'd rather I called a wrecking service, I said in a shy voice. You won't get a wrecker out here at this hour, so let's have a look and see if I can't figure out your problem. It wasn't 15 minutes later and some tightened spark plugs that Cole had my car purring like a kitten. You're pretty good at that, I said as he dropped the hood over the engine. You should own your own auto repair business. Cole looked at me and rolled his eyes sheepishly. Don't tell me, I said, feeling even more foolish in front of him than when I'd been lying on the floor with a sack of feet on my chest. You're the local auto mechanic, aren't you? Guilty. How much do I owe you for your work? Nothing, he said, wiping his hands on a rag he pulled from behind the seat in his truck. It was just some loose spark plugs. Will you at least let me feed you supper? I haven't unpacked all the boxes yet, so it's a mess, and all I have to offer is from a can, but I make a mean canned stew. I knew I was babbling, but I didn't want the evening to end. This guy had found a way under my skin, and I liked it. Correction, I liked him. As a matter of fact, I love canned stew. I eat it all the time, he said with a grin, following me into the house. Over dinner and coffee, we kept it cool, avoiding any discussion of the kiss in the truck and sticking to safe topics. It was 10:30 when we happened to look up at the kitchen clock simultaneously. Wow, it's late. It's that late already? Cole said, jumping up from the table. I have an early morning in the shop, so I'm sure you do at the feed store. Following him to the door, there was so much more I wanted to say, but I settled on. Thank you for fixing my car. Turning to stand in the doorway, he lifted my chin with his finger and stared down into my eyes. Believe me, it was my pleasure. Leaning toward me, he captured my lips with his and kissed me gently, then turned to leave. Can I call you tomorrow? He called through the window of his truck. Yes, I said, and then thought again. I mean, no, my phone isn't hooked up yet. I'll see you tomorrow at the feed store then. Hey, you're all right for a girl, Mr. Guthrie said after I'd completed cleaning and reorganizing all the shelves of tack and animal medications. This old place ain't never looked so good. Thanks, Mr. Guthrie, looking over his shoulder. I could see Cole's truck pulling up in front of the store. If you don't mind, I'd like to take a break now. You go right ahead. I can handle the register. Slapping at the dust on the front of my jeans and chambray shirt, I shrugged. I hoped you didn't mind a girl who got dirty when she worked. Walking outside into the cool December day, I inhaled the crisp, clean air as Cole climbed out of his truck. He smiled and walked toward me, taking my hand in his before he spoke. Hi, gorgeous, he said softly. Suddenly shy, I answered back. Hello yourself. This relationship was all so new. I'd only known him for a day, but already it seemed like much longer. Would you have dinner with me at my house tonight? I'll cook, he said, a smile lifting the corners of his mouth, his eyes twinkling. What? You don't like canned stew anymore? I asked, propping a fist on my hip and quirking an eyebrow. Oh, no, I love your canned stew. I just thought, since you've just moved here and you're still not unpacked, you could stand a break and to have someone else cook for you. Smiling at his back paddling, I nodded. I'd love to have dinner with you, Cole. What time? House 7. I want to stop by my place to shower and change first. Can we make it 7:30? That would be great, he said, leaning close as if he'd kiss me, but another customer drove into the parking lot before his lips made contact. Pulling back, he grimaced. Later, he said, and squeezing my hand, he turned and left. Later, later, that one word held so much promise. I was flying on cloud 9 all day long after he'd left. I worked hard and fast, completing each task in record time. By the end of the day, Mr. Guthrie was scratching his head. I just can't get over you, little girl. I don't have to wait a week to know when I've got a gold mine. You're hired for good if you want the job still. I'd love it, I said, throwing my arms around the big guy, hugging him in my enthusiasm. Mr. Guthrie patted my back, then pushed me away, his face flushed and his countenance flustered. Now, don't go getting all girly on me. Can't have the customers thinking something's going on between the hired help and me. Yes, sir, I said, snapping to attention and executing a sharp salute before relaxing into a grin. Thanks, Mr. Guthrie. This job means the world to me. I practically skipped out the door to my car, the giddy feeling of finally being accepted and the anticipation of dinner with a great guy had set me on top of the world. Pulling into the driveway of my new home, I rushed up the front steps and came to a dead stop, my heart plummeting into my stomach. A note and a rose were taped to my door. With my hands shaking, I reached for the rose and the seemingly innocent, I reached for the note and the seemingly innocent rose. Daring to look over my shoulder, I checked for shadowy figures in the darkness while I fumbled with my keys. Unlocking the door, I threw it open, practically falling through in my haste. Slamming the door closed, I shot home the bolt and ran around the house. That doesn't make sense. I shot home the bolt and ran around the house, checking the locks on all the other doors and windows. Every light that could be turned on was on before I finally stopped, allowing my speeding heart to rest. It was then that I unfolded the paper and read the handwritten words. Dear Cassidy, I'm so glad I found you. I hope to be seeing a lot more of you soon. Love, E.K. Oh, God, he'd found me. I sank onto the sofa and hugged a pillow to me, tears forming and coursing down my face. What did I have to do to get rid of this guy? It was so unfair. Just when I thought I was going to be okay, this had to happen. Perhaps I should call the sheriff. Looking around, though, I suddenly remembered that I didn't have a phone yet. It would be another week before the local phone cooperative could get to my order. The fragrant scent of the rose permeated the air in my living room, reminding me of my fear. Snatching it up, I tossed it into the trash and piled the newspapers on top of it to stifle the smell. Climbing the stairs to the second floor, I stripped out of my dirty clothes and took a quick shower. All of a sudden, I was physically exhausted. I pulled an oversized t-shirt over my head and lay down on the bed, crying myself to sleep. Bang, bang, bang. The sound startled me awake, and I cowered under the covers for a moment before my head could clear and recognize the sound as someone knocking on my door. Fear clutched my heart and I hesitated, not knowing what I should do. Bang, bang, bang. Cassidy, it's me, Cole. An overwhelming sense of relief flooded my veins and I leapt from the bed, taking the steps two at a time. I struggled with the locks, then threw the door open, flying into Cole's arms, almost knocking him off his feet. Hey, what is all this? He asked, his arms coming around me as I burst into tears. He found me, I cried into his shirt. Who found you? He asked, attempting to disengage my arms from the death grip around his neck. Pushing me back, he smoothed the hair from my face and tilted my chin up. Take a deep breath and tell me what happened. The secret admirer. He found me, I said in a hiccup, shaking my body. Cole's face hardened and he looked around. Where is he? I don't know, I wailed. Then how do you know he was here? He asked, ushering me back into my house and closing the door behind us. The note and the rose, I said, leading the way to the table I'd laid the note on. Lifting the offensive scrap of paper between my fingertips, I handed it to him. The scowl on Cole's face cleared, and he gave me a sheepish grin. Cassidy, this note is from me. From you? I shook my head, not quite grasping his words. But the rose, the initials, I don't understand. Cole pulled me into his arms and rocked me, a gentle chuckle rumbling through his chest beneath my ear. I put the note and the rose on the door. Holding the note under my nose, he continued, see, it's signed, okay? Looking closely at the scrawling writing, I finally saw that it was a C and not an E, like I'd originally thought, but relief turned quickly into anger. How could you do that to me? I stormed, pushing out of his embrace and pummeling his chest with my fists. You scared the living daylights out of me. Grabbing my wrists, Cole halted my attack. Look at me, Cassidy. The quiet command in his voice got my attention, and I tipped my head back to stare into his eyes. I wouldn't have done it if I'd known you'd react this way. I wouldn't do anything to hurt you, he said, running a hand along my cheek. You scared the crap out of me when you didn't show up at 7:30. I imagined all kinds of things, from car wrecks to stalkers. I even thought you might have changed your mind about seeing me. Change my mind? That was the most preposterous thing I'd heard of yet. No, I was just too scared to leave my house. Damn, what a mess. Suddenly feeling foolish, I turned and walked away from him. You must think I'm a flake. A very beautiful flake, he said, waking up behind me to pull me back against his chest. That guy really has you spooked, huh? Yeah, but I shouldn't have overreacted. You had every right, he said, his lips brushing the sensitive skin behind my ear. My blood stirred, picking up the pace, until it was screaming through my veins, causing tingling reactions in multiple parts of my body. I turned in his embrace and wrapped my arms around his neck. I pulled his head down to mine. "Hold me," I whispered. Our lips connected and he deepened the kiss, pushing his tongue past my teeth to duel with my tongue. His hands slid lower, slipping under my nightshirt. He kneaded the flesh of my bottom, then roamed across the small of my back. It felt so good. "Too many clothes," he said then, pulling the shirt over my head and tossing it onto the sofa. I stood in nothing but a skimpy pair of bikini panties, feeling incredibly sexy and excited. My fingers hurried to work the buttons loose on his shirt, tugging it out of the waistband of his jeans and sliding it off his broad shoulders. My hands weaved through the coarse hairs on his chest, pinching the hard brown nipples. With a breast in each hand and his lips pulling at one of them, Cole stopped and groaned. Before I knew what was happening, he swept me into his arms and carried me up the flight of stairs to my bedroom, closing the door with his foot. Every night for the next 2 weeks was the same. We ate dinner either at his place or mine and ended up making love into the wee hours. It was tiring yet exhilarating. I'd never felt so cherished. December flew by, and before I realized it, Christmas Eve was upon us. I was busily decorating a tree to surprise Cole. We'd spent time at his family's home with all his siblings and various cousins and in-laws that day. After the evening meal, he'd driven to a neighboring town to take his mother to visit his invalid grandmother in the nursing home, and had promised to be back by midnight to spend Christmas with me. I was missing my parents and feeling a little melancholy, wishing that Cole would hurry back and chase away my loneliness. I'd called my mother and father earlier to wish them a Merry Christmas, and the packages they'd sent had arrived in the mail a few days earlier, but the voices and the gifts weren't enough. I wanted to be held. Sometime after 10, I fell asleep on the sofa while watching the news. I was startled awake by a knock on the door. Leaping to my feet, my happiness carrying me through the house to the door, I pushed back the bolt and flung the door open. "I'm so glad you're here." My words died in my throat as I stood in shock, staring at a strangely familiar man standing in the darkness of my porch. Stumbling backward over the threshold, I attempted to slam the door shut in his face, but a hand stopped it and forced it back open. Who are you?" I demanded, backing away from him. "Don't you know me? You served me coffee every day for several months." Suddenly feeling nauseous, I clutched the back of a chair, putting it between us. "You're E.K.?" "You're E.K.?" I asked, my voice barely a squeak. "Bingo, Miss Cassidy. E.K., Edward Crowell," he said, moving closer until my back was up against the wall. Shoving the chair out of my hands, he grabbed a handful of my hair and lifted it to his nose, inhaling deeply. "You don't now know how often I've dreamed of this." "Get out," I said. He ignored me, clenching the hair tighter, dragging my head back while his other hand rose. "You're so beautiful and much too good for the man you've been sleeping with." That scared me even more. This man had been watching my house. He was crazy and I needed to get away before he hurt me. And then another thought occurred to me. Cole was supposed to be here any minute. If I could just hold on until he arrived. But what would Edward do to Cole? He might hurt him, and I couldn't let that happen, so I had to warn him. Just then, lights moved slowly down the driveway. Cole. Oh, thank God. Edward didn't notice because his back was to the windows. I knew it was up to me to distract him long enough for Cole to get out of the truck. Edward's head moved closer to mine in a clumsy attempt to kiss me. The hand holding my hair was pulling so tightly that tears came to my eyes. When he was close enough, I lifted my knee fast and hard, catching him in the groin. The hand loosened in my hair as he doubled over in pain. I was free suddenly and racing out the door before he could regain his balance. Cole, I screamed, launching myself into his arms. Wow, I guess you missed me, he said, chuckling in the dark. No, Cole, the secret admirer. I struggled to catch my breath and pointed to the house. He's in there. Grasping my shoulders, Cole shoved me toward the truck. Get in there and back and lock the doors. If I'm not back in 5 minutes, go get the sheriff. Obeying his command, I locked the doors and waited, peering through the windshield as Cole moved toward the front door. Rolling the window down enough to listen, I strained to hear what was going on. Minutes felt like hours, but after three long ones, Edward limped out of the house with his arm held twisted behind him by Cole. When the sheriff had Edward safely handcuffed and tucked in the back of his car, I stood in the shelter of Cole's arms. Before the sheriff closed the door, I could hear Edward. He won't love you like I would have, Miss Cassidy. Thank God, I said, and turned to embrace Cole. Okay, well, that's the end of that story, and that's going to do it for this edition of the Romance Program. This has been Volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. Take care of yourselves and have a great week, and I will talk to you later. Bye-bye.